Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Live 100. I'm your host, Tohaka Amana L. Bay, and this evening we're dealing with contract law and reincarnation. We're going to answer the following questions. How do we formulate our own contracts? Because that seems to be something that we have to get in our mind and learn how to do. We haven't understood that the United States operates on a continuous series of contracts on the terms of what's called contract law. And the United States Corporation does not interfere with your right to make contracts. What we want to do today is we want to learn how to formulate our own contracts. Let's get our own stuff up there, and let's do our own thing with these contracts. And this is what we are want to try to get on with this evening. In the second half of the broadcast, we will be dealing with what evidence do we have of reincarnation. We're going to deal with that this evening. We got some very heavy information for you to ponder, because what we're looking for is plain and simple evidence. We hear a whole lot of stuff about a whole lot of things, but it's time for us to find out about evidence. We want evidence. We want, what proof do you have of this life and death, life after death situation? Because we are facing some things inside the United States, and a lot of us that are not listening to these broadcasts are not, they don't have cell phones, they don't have communication devices and stuff, and they're just out there. And so we want to know what we have at our disposal, where we are, how is things going to work out with this thing? Is there life after death? Do we go and come back again? What is this thing about life? So we're going to look at that in the second half of the broadcast. But in the first half, we're going to deal with contracts. Keep in mind that the phone lines are open. The number to dial in is 310-982-4184. That's 310-982-4184. Okay? I want to make mention of the fact that now we have a couple of daytime broadcasts. We have some sisters in the morning. Sister Sharon Hunter Bay comes on at 10 a.m. in the morning, have some very explosive topics, some very good guests and stuff. So you need to check that out. That's 10 a.m., the Sharon Hunter Bay Morning Show at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So make sure that you tune into that and check the sister out, because she's bringing some very powerful information. You can go back to www.blogtalk.com. Tahaka and listen to some of the previous broadcasts that she's done. Also, a sister by the name of Ariel. She has a daytime broadcast as well. The sister comes on at, from 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time until 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Both these sisters have two powerful broadcasts. Sister Ariel have the Black Wall Street, for those of you who are new and haven't checked it out. She be on in the morning from 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time until 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we will be having another sister that will be running the daytime broadcast as well. I'll be coming through there periodically. There'll be other guests coming along. And so it's going to be very, very unique. We're already up and running. So you all need to check this out, okay? All right. Hold on 1 second.
During a natural disaster and economic collapse, you have to ask yourself a question. Am I prepared? Do I have everything that I need to survive and to protect my family? In order to gather this information and have it ready and available so that you can prepare now, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. Call me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay. For more details, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is vital for us to prepare ourselves for whatever happened. There are many people across the country that weren't prepared when the time came. Don't let that happen to you. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Let's delve directly into this contract situation, because I'm receiving some phone calls from some folks, and they just ain't quite got it down to a science. And I think it will become easy for you if you understand the premise that everything in the United States operates on a continuous series of contracts. Everything operates that way. You can't get married without one. You can't buy and sell without one. Everything operates that way. Contract law. That's the order of the day. And the key to this thing is to understand that you have to learn the rules of the game. When you learn the rules of the game, you can formulate your own contract, because the U.S. corporation does not interfere with your right to do that. We've been getting everybody else's contract, but we've got to learn how to formulate our own contract. We've got to learn how to deal with the basic modus operandi of formulating our contracts and serving folks with our contracts, opposed to getting contracts and not doing anything but just assuming that we have to pay. We got to get away from this type of behavior, and we got to do something different. Now, what you want to do anytime you get something that you have to sign, one of the first things that you want to do is whoever it is that is giving you this contract, you got to stop them on the dictation of policy about that contract. A lot of people say, well, just, you know, I need your signature here. But the first thing you have to do is say, well, look, let me read this before I sign it, because you're putting your signature on something that's been given to you by somebody else. And then you got some people out there that are become a little upset with you if you are taking the time to read what they're giving you. Their attitude is that, well, I do this all day long. People just sign it, and then nobody don't take no time to be going in and all about reading nothing. But at the same time, they're asking for your signature. And that's very unfair to you, for somebody to force you to sign something, and they're not giving you an opportunity to read whatever it is that they're you got to sign. That ain't making no sense. So when you are given a document or put in a position where you have to sign something, the first thing that you want to do is you want to look at everything that's on that piece of paper, especially the fine print. It's very important for us to deal with that, because within the fine print, you will discover that everything that's down there is laid out to protect them and not you. So the next question should be, why should I sign this contract? And in a lot of cases, they say, well, if you want what you're trying to get, you'll sign this contract. So it's a situation where you are feeling like, well, I'm forced to perform based on the contract that you put before me. What about when you become skilled enough to create your contract, put your clauses in there, and enforce your clauses? Because you have a lot of things at your disposal. Nothing stops you from putting in fine print on your contract. It's all legal. It's a part of the game. And it's a part of the game that's called the commerce game. It all operates in the commerce game. If you do a will, it is a golden opportunity for you to put things in that will that can be expounded upon by you, because you created that contract. Now, you bring legitimacy to your contract with your signature, and you can also get witnesses, and you can also get a notary stamp, and notary is occupying the office of Secretary of State, so that carries a lot of weight. So what we have to do is understand from our position how important it is and how valuable it is for us to formulate our own contracts and serve our own contracts on other people. Because it doesn't make any sense. Why should we be constantly under obligation to perform from somebody else? Why? I mean, why is it always that way? And we constantly hear about freedom. We are born free moral agents, and we have rights, and we are the people, and all of these different things, but we constantly on a daily basis find ourselves enslaved and bound to the contracts that we have signed. And the reason why we are finding ourselves in these positions is because we're not paying attention and we're not formulating our own contract. So if you would, after this broadcast, if you would take the time to just go through some of your old files, for instance, and pull up the light bill, pull up the water bill, pull up the mortgage contract, pull up the student loan contract, pull up the driver's license contract, any contract bill. In a lot of cases, there's information on receipts, and just concentrate on looking at the fine print. And what you will discover in these cases is that there's always something there to keep you obligated to them, or keep these people in the catbird seat and you on the outside. So as a people who are supposed to be free, we're supposed to have rights, and we're supposed to have this, that, and the other, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to take charge. That's the bottom line. If we want to turn it around, you go to a check cashing place, you say you want to get a check cashing card. Well, one of the requirements to the one I went to is that, well, you have to have a Social Security card. In other words, we can't take your word for your identity. We have to have a state-issued ID. In other words, in order for you to get anything from us, you got to prove to us that you are a slave or a victim or a person, which means that you are not a man or a woman in a lot of cases. And all of this stuff is illegal. So if it's illegal, what are you going to do about it? You can sue them. You really can. you can fix it where that requirement is totally removed off the books and nobody else had to be victimized in that way. And you get paid for doing that. But we have to stop allowing this kind of stuff to go on by taking responsibility to deal with each and every situation. And you will eventually get to the point where you won't have any problems about these people. But that doesn't mean that they won't try to slide you something, a contract that they have created that's going to benefit them. Because everything is about contract. All you got to do is just pay attention. You know, it doesn't matter where you go. If you go out of town and you go through the, say for instance, you're going down south and you go through the turnpike, you know, you get your receipt over there and you go into McDonald's or Burger King and wherever you go, and everybody gives you a receipt. And ask them sometime, well, do y'all have something in writing about y'all policy? And they say, yeah, what can I read it? And they either give you some more paper or tell you where to look at in the building about it. There's that fine print. And when you read that fine print, it's designed to protect them against you. Never mind in a situation where they're saying, well, this is designed strictly to protect you and for you to benefit and for us to be the victim. No. So if it's like that, how do we change circumstances? How do we live a little bit differently? We can do it by simply paying attention, and especially paying attention to the fine print. And you can ask questions, because there's nothing wrong with asking questions when you get something from somebody else. And it's in the form of a contract. You understand what I'm saying? And this goes throughout the entire court system. It goes to the police system. Just pay attention sometimes. I'm not telling anybody to go to jail. I'm not telling you to do that. But if by some hook or crook you find yourself in there and they're giving you things to sign, tell them, excuse me, would it be all right if I read the fine print before I sign it? And you'll be surprised at what you run into. And this stuff is prevalent throughout the United States because we're dealing with constantly dealing with contracts. Contracts that are written by other people is designed to benefit these other people. If they send you something in the mail for the child support, read very, very carefully. Look at everything. That's a contract. They're trying to get you the contract. And you have the right to what's called offer and acceptance. Someone has made you an offer. And it is up to you to accept the offer or decline the offer because they have sent you a contract. But what we have been led to believe is that if we get something from the child support people, that's it. We're obligated. There's, you know, they got me. It doesn't operate that way. It doesn't work that way. Everything's on contract. You can, you know, then they got system now where they try to send you less and less paperwork and just assume through the original threat that you obligated. Ask for some paperwork. I need to see something in writing. You know, show me something. Because once they do that, they are under obligation to give you some full disclosure. If they haven't given you any full disclosure, now you got an opportunity to say, well, look, I didn't get full disclosure. You say, I owe child support, but you have this address to an all caps fiction. You say, I was obligated to perform over here. I was obligated to do this. I was obligated to do that. And all this was verbally done in a courtroom. I didn't get anything in writing. And I'm just to assume that I'm obligated to you. And then the next thing I know, somebody's coming along and telling me, well, there's a KPIs for your arrest because you didn't go to court and it's about child support. They got all kind of ways of dealing with situation, but what you should demand is you should demand something in writing. you want to determine, first of all, who are you talking to? Are you referring to me? Because I'm a man, or I'm a woman, and that means that my name is in all upper and lowercase letters. So if you haven't given me anything and I have to ask you for it and you do give me something and it's filled out or addressed to an all-caps franchise, now we have a problem. You understand what I'm saying? So in this country that's operating on a continuous series of contracts under the heading or banner of what's called contract law, we have to simply examine the contracts. That's not complicated. Not complicated at all.
Hi, I'm Tahaka Amana L. Bay. There's some very important things that we need to consider when dealing with police stops. First of all, does failure to wear a seatbelt constitute a breach of the peace? Is it a public nuisance? Is there an injured party? If a policeman stops you, is he an officer of the law? Has he taken a public oath of office? Is he a public official? Criminal impersonation in the first degree is a felony. In order to exercise your freedom of rights successfully, contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now send an email, tahaka53@hotmail.com.
Okay, we're back. I wanted to take the time out to bring this one little small important point out and do a broadcast specifically about the contracts because I get a lot of phone calls daily, and it appears to me that we are, in some cases, not everybody, because a lot of brothers and sisters that I talk to, they really got it going on. They totally understand this stuff. They are going to work. They are doing their due diligence, and now they are making progress with this thing. But you want to, when it comes to contracts, you want to look at everything that is available to you. We have a master library. Inside that master library, we have affidavits, templates. We have documentation of all sorts. We have Black's Law dictionary that you can clearly look up the words, because see, once you get it upstairs, it's all over. They can come at you from every conceivable angle, and you always got some resources to work from because you understand the rules of the game, and once you understand the rules of any game, then you can officially learn how to play. The only thing that you have to learn after that is how to win. Once you know how the pieces move, and what's going on with the rules and regulations and guidelines, now you're ready to create your own strategy, and your own strategy is designed for your small print that someone else has to abide by. Because we are in the United States operating under a very, very unique system. The United States as a corporation is operating in a bankruptcy. The whole country operates on contract law. If we had money, real money, I don't think, I cannot see how all the contracts would be necessary if we had money in silver and gold, because that's an outright investment, that's an outright purchase, that's an outright even exchange for goods and services. There's no need to sign anything. If you give me some gold, you may want to formulate a contract. It depends on what it is, but I think things will be a less than what we're doing now today, because we got Chapter 11 bankruptcy going on. We got the gold siege of 33, and then we have House Joint Resolution 192 that's already in effect. Area code 252. Tell me who you are, where you're calling from, What's your question? 252. Okay. Whoever it is, just listen. Now, let's go back to the fine print. And I keep reiterating this because I want you to start paying attention. Because there's a lot of people that's being hung by fine print. Because they got the contract, they're looking at everything, but since the print is so small, I'm not going to take any time to be reading all this. I'm not going to go into all this. But you have to understand, you got some in your hand that came from somebody else requesting your performance. And a lot of times we need your signature. We need just to you to act on this. We need you to perform on this. And we need you to do this week after week after week after month after month after month. And we do not stop to look at the contract and to dissect the contract. Turn it over. If there's information on the back of the contract, read it. If it's something you run into that you don't understand, look it up. And you discover that it's all designed to benefit the people that gave it to you. And there's nothing in there designed to protect you or any rights that you may have or none of that. You may think it is, but after you look at the structure of everything that's going on, you will find out that it's not. It's all designed to benefit them. So I wanted to do this broadcast today to get us to start focusing on your contract. And you can start practicing by taking a look around in your house from the documentation that comes from outside your environment and come into your home. Okay? Area code 609. Tell me who you are, where you're calling from, and what's your question?
Brother Tahaka, this is Tyrone from New Jersey. And
hey, man.
I've done what you said. All right. I done what you said about 10, 11 days ago, and they responded to my letter for a copy of my contract. They said, well, give us a few days, and we'll get together. Well, I gave them a few days, and they sent it in the mail today with a cover here stating that your request for loan documents related to above reference home loan will receive. But now they sent me two pages of a bank that I refinanced with in 2007 and just say nope. Well, I'm looking for a contract with Bank of America, but it's something from a bank that I refinanced with in 2007. What's going on here?
All right. Did you send them your contract?
No, I sent them a letter, like you said. Yeah, you told me to send them a letter and request
contract.
A copy on the contract, that's, right.
Right, that's your contract. Okay, and you had specific requests in that document. Was that an affidavit you sent them?
Well, yeah.
Okay, and you had specific questions that you wanted answered. The information that you got from them in regards to your contract that you sent them, did they answer every point in that document that you sent them?
Nah.
Okay.
I just wrote them a letter. You just told me to write them a simple letter for a copy of the contract, and I did that there, and they responded. And they sent me a letter, a two-page letter, a page and a half, and on the front page it just say nope, N-O-T-E. And then they go out of
okay,
mind.
Okay, and that's about what type of problem now?
I'm trying to figure, is this, now, I'm probably dealing with Bank of America, but Bank of America sent me a vertical lien paperwork that I done with them, refinanced 2007. I was expecting something from Bank of America, a contract with
okay,
them.
So this company is claiming that you owe them something. They sent you documentation claiming that you owe them something, right?
Right. They said I'm the borrower promised to pay interest on this loan, $162,000, right?
Okay. And you sent them an affidavit requesting certain information, but they sent you something that didn't answer your contract. Is that correct?
No, only thing I done exactly what you said. You just told me just write a through line letter stating that you want to copy your contract. That was it. I ain't do no specific. I ain't do like affidavits.
Okay, now,
I just wrote,
the company, listen to what I'm asking you.
Okay.
The company that's claiming that you owe them sent you something back claiming that you owe somebody else.
Right. I owe Vertical Lens. This, now, I send my mortgage money into Bank of America every month. And now I wrote that little letter to them. They sent me back saying that I owe this company such and such, you know, money. But I'm thinking, wait a minute now, how can I owe them? But I'm dealing with Bank of America. My mortgage is supposed to be going to them, so they got me confused.
Okay, so you sent them the documentation on your contract, and they did not respond to every bit of your request. Excuse me. In the documentation that you sent them. Is that correct?
Right. They're saying that I owe Vertical Lend, but I'm paying the money to Bank of America.
Brother.
Yeah.
My question to you, you sent them a contract.
Right.
With a request for several points in that letter you sent, right?
Right.
The people that you sent that to, did these people respond to satisfaction of what you were requesting from them?
No, I don't feel they didn't give me what I wanted.
Okay, that's the bottom line, right there.
Okay.
You understand? That's the bottom line. You don't have to be getting into all of this about what they've done about somebody else. Forget about that. I've already stated to you the whole contract operates on a contingency of contract. Nobody interferes with your right to make contracts. And when you send these people a request to these people, they're supposed to satisfy what you're requesting. If they send you something talking about where you owe such and such people around the corner, they didn't respond to your letter. So,
right. I see you saying. Yeah.
Okay. So therefore, the what you sent them, we're still waiting.
Right. Because it's something about somebody else instead of them.
Yeah. So we're not concerned about that. So what I would do now is I would formulate an affidavit with specific request, and I will send that to them with an outline of specific request on my own contract and signed, witnessed, and notarized, and send that to them and give them a specific time limit to them. We don't want to know nothing about Joe Blow down the street that they claiming you owe. We don't want to know nothing about that. We ain't concerned about that. They ain't got nothing to do with their performance on the contract that we have sent them.
Right.
You understand? So that's why I'm having this broadcast today, because I get these kind of calls, and I ask the brothers and sisters the same question over and over and over. Did you send them a contract? Yes, I did. Did they answer everything in your contract? Well, they said such a thing, and I'd be like, brother, sister, hold it. My question to you is, did they respond to everything that you request from them in your contract? Well, no, they didn't. That's the only thing I needed to know.
Right. I see you, Sam, bro.
I don't need to know about the scarecrow broom on the side somewhere that they send you that don't respond to nothing. I don't need to know about that. The only thing I need is the answer to the question that I asked you. Because I'm trying to get our brothers and sisters to start becoming accustomed to creating their own contract, formulating their own contract, and enforcing their own contract based on the understanding of contract law. The whole country operates that way. It's real, real simple. So when you get something from anybody and you've requested something and they seen you something talking about something else or seen you something, because I have gotten big yellow envelopes full of information that had my signature on all kind of documents. But the request that I made on my document that I sent to them, not one single point was answered or rebutted. So the big yellow envelope is to be used to be put in the fireplace to start a good fire.
So I immediately went to go to my file cabinet and I found my my original deed, not copy of a deed, but my original deed that recorded in the county that I'm in. I got that on my hand. It said original deed, not copy of a deed of my home. You know, so I said, well, I'll get in touch with you later on, tomorrow or something, but I caught your show tonight, so I think I ease on in there and bring this to your attention.
All right.
But, you know,
well,
I did.
Tell you what, you still call me tomorrow. And so we can do something else, and I'll get some more things done.
Yeah, I sure appreciate you taking time out, bro. Yeah, because it's very interesting. You know, you open my eyes up to something. You know, they send me some information that's about somebody else, and I'm talking about them, what I requested from them. But you're right. You're on the ball.
The thing is, and I keep telling brothers and sisters over and over and over, they are good at sending rocks through your window. But when you start throwing rocks back through their window, they're not accustomed to that. They don't know what to do about that, because we got so many people that are just accepting their contracts, responding and paying and scared and booed and all this stuff. But when we start formulating some contracts and we start asking some questions, and we start getting in the position to demand some things, now we have a whole different ball game.
There you go.
It's remarkable how they respond. They, you know, I have seen some of the worst jobs. I mean, there are a lot of offices out there, and I got to say this, where you got bill collectors that don't know nothing about collecting bills. They're sending some of the worst stuff back that I ever seen.
Wow. Well, I'm going to call you tomorrow. I'm going to see if I can call you. You do got affidavits in your library, right?
Yeah, we got them up in there. Yeah, plenty of them up in there.
Well,
already done out. The format shows you how to formulate one, and the basic structure is there. Of how to go about creating that and formulate your contract. Yes, that's there. Yes.
Yeah, cause I'm glad I talked to you, because I was going to sit on this. I said, well, damn, they're going to see a paper they responded to, so I just say, such. But it troubled me. I said, wait a minute, Vertical Wind? But I signed a letter to Bank of America. What I'm doing, by the way, Vertical Wind, I went after them, Bank of Insurance in New Jersey, went after them, and a year later, the Fed was at my door with $3,500 check. They had overcharged me original fee. Bank of New Jersey, Bank of America, Kathy, went out to her team, and they found that they overcharged me $3,500. You know?
Uh-huh.
So I ain't know no better than that, but yeah.
What you're saying is something that people are being victimized by every single day.
Yeah,
what we're trying to do here today is to get people to become aware of what's going on and to start dealing with these people and fighting back.
Yeah, I sure appreciate that.
Being a victim.
Yeah, I sure appreciate what you're doing. I mean, thank God for you. But I'm a yield. I know how it is when people get on the other end because they're very interested. You're very knowledgeable, and they want a piece of you. So I'm going to stay on the line, you know, and finish listening to the show. But I will call you tomorrow, sir.
Okay. All right. I'll talk to you tomorrow, bro.
Outstanding. Okay.
Okay. Now, if anybody else got a question, the number to dial in is 310-982-4184. That's 310-982-4184. Now, in the second part of this broadcast, we're going to start dealing with this reincarnation thing. But I wanted to go over this information about these contracts again so you can see how it goes. Real, real simple. They are accustomed to sending you contracts, and they're expecting you to perform. But when you start challenging things based on what you know about the current situation inside the United States and the debt and all this, how could you say, oh, you're dead when there's no money and all this stuff? When you start responding to that, then you would discover that there's a whole lot of off-the-wall stuff coming back the other way. And you'll know that there's something wrong with the situation if you pay attention. But in a lot of cases, we're not challenging anything. We don't know nothing about formulating our own contracts. We don't know nothing about no affidavits. We don't know how to put nothing together. We don't know who to send it to. We don't know nothing. So we're having this show tonight so you will know. And so you can actually take it and start doing something about it. And if we got people all over the country doing this kind of stuff, then we can make some progress. Area code 502. Tell me who you are, what's your question, where you're calling from. 502.
This is Brother Taylor out of Louisville, Kentucky. How you doing, Brother Tahaka?
I'm all right, Brother Taylor. Let me have it.
Yes, sir. I got a quick question. I found out that Bank of America dumped my mortgage in with like 2 million other ones and sent it to Nation Star, which is a debt collector. Well, I looked at a bill. Nation Star sent me a bill today. I've been in my house for 4 years, and they charged me for a home inspection this month.
Okay.
And, you know, that being that they're a debt collector, you know, they keep telling me they're the lender when they're not. But this debt collector's charging me for a home inspection, and they couldn't explain why they put their charge on the bill they sent me.
All right, well, who came out and inspected your home?
Nobody did.
How much did charge you?
Just $26.75, but 10 cents is too much.
All right, well, let's look at it this way. They charge you $26.10. That's a small amount. Most people, you know, won't pay no attention. They just think it's just all part of it, and they don't do nothing about it. So just imagine 200,000 people through an automatic computer that receive the same thing. That's a lot of money that's being just taken from people.
Right, and that's a fraudulent charge. Nobody came to my house, and why would anybody come to my house to do a home inspection from a debt collector?
See, that's what I'm trying to tell you, and I keep telling people over and over and over, these people are criminals, and they're doing everything that they can to rob the people, to fleece the people, and this is just a small amount of what goes on in the banking systems every single day. Bank of America has been sued numerous times for millions and billions of dollars, and they still ain't ran out of money because they know how to steal good. And they do it every day. They're robbing people every day.
So, supervisor today said that they're going to do an investigation and find out why I was charged that. And I said, y'all full of crap. Y'all not going to do no investigation.
Okay,
let
me make sure I got this right. The wolf charged you $26.
Right.
You call the wolf put the fox on the line, who used to eating chickens too, and told you that he gonna investigate the wolf and see if he ate any chicken.
Right. You know, one last question. I got a bill.
I'm listening. Hello? Hello? Okay, I think the brothers are calling us drop. Okay, I'm going to open up his line in a minute, but we're going to go right to a little quick commercial break, and when we come back, I'm going to open up the brother's line again and see if I can hear what he has.
Living in a constant state of fear has never been good. Many of us fear the Internal Revenue Service. We don't know what to do about it. For one reason, we don't know what it is. Send for my free reports to tahaka53@hotmail.com. That's tahaka53@hotmail.com. We'll send our articles to you. We'll also send one good solid video that should do it once and for all about exercising your freedom of right to travel. And our second video shows you exactly what to do with your writ of habeas corpus, how to deal with these people in the courtroom, and what to send these people and how to respond to them. Send that to tahaka53@hotmail.com, or you can call me, area code 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Don't hesitate to visit our website, tahaka53@hotmail.com. That's the email website, www.newdateelimination.com.
Okay, brother. Area code 502. Are you back with us?
Yes, sir. I fell off. I was just going to mention to you, I got a letter from, I guess, a collection company to contract with the student loan people at the Department of Education. They sent me a letter, and I know exactly how much I owe my student loan. But this company added $15,000 worth of fees on to that amount that I owe the government.
Okay.
And I'm like, what the hell is this? It's the first letter I've ever, these people just sent me this letter saying they're collecting on behalf of the U.S. Department of Education, and there's $15,000 worth of penalties and fees.
Okay. Well, you know what I think you need to do? I think you need to go over to www.newdebtelimination.com. And get you some artillery and get some hanging ropes, and so we can throw some of them across some trees and string up some folk. And if you go over there, give me a call, and I tell you exactly what we need to get, because in the first place, they didn't give you anything in the first place. And in the second place, what the letters that you receive, and you have to understand that this is just not an isolated, it's just not one isolated letter that's sent to you with this kind of stuff on it. They are doing this to hundreds of thousands of people daily on a regular basis, and they are constantly receiving revenue from people who don't know how defending themselves. They're doing everything that they can to try to pay this stuff. You got people who are actually going out getting loans and getting deeper in debt to try to pay something somebody claimed they owe, they don't know nothing about. They won't even take the time to read it. They won't take the time to look at the fine print. They're just a victim. And this stuff is rampant. This is going to hundreds, thousands of people like this. This is, we had a show on our sister, Sharon Hunter Bay's show, where she played a plug where they said that the mortgage situation is the biggest mortgage, the school loan situation is the biggest mortgage bubble in recorded history, is equivalent to the mortgage debacle. None of this stuff is designed for you to pay off. Is only designed to rob you and separate you from your purse. And you will be separated from your purse if you do not defend yourself against these people. You have to fight back. You have to ask questions. Isn't that wrong with asking questions? You claim I owe you an additional $15,000, could you please provide me a copy with the wet ink signature on it that I signed for the $15,000? Or you can please give me an itemized breakdown of the $15,000 that you claim I owe with a notarized copy, and on and on and on. But you have to fight these people back. You have to have the documentation to send them, and then you have to enforce what you're sending these people. Because these people have declared war against us. I don't know if people realize
they're crooked as hell.
Yeah. This is just, man, you got people that have had their homes, one couple had their home taken from them over a 70-something dollar fee that they didn't pay in a courtroom. Then you had people, mortgage companies and banks foreclosing on people that have paid their mortgage and up to date on their payment, and they still foreclose them. These are criminals, man. You got to get these people. If they send anything to you, you need to be ready to go to war. Look at it. Read it. And look at the fine print. Take your time. Sit down and examine it real good, and then get in position to respond to it and deal with them. But all too often, we are so busy doing so many other things that we just simply just toss stuff to the side, and I'll get at it later.
Right.
And all this stuff, but you can't do that. And this is how they're getting people. And they're putting this stuff on the credit profile. The people going to court. They're putting liens against them. They're taking they're doing all kind of stuff, man. And you had to fight back.
Sir, well, I appreciate you. Now you the floor.
All right, my brother. I appreciate you calling in. The number to call in is 310-982-4184. If you have a question, go ahead and raise your hand. I will open up the line so that you can get in. Okay? Don't hesitate to call.
Don't go.
talk to you about another move. Now, suppose you send out your contract. You draw up your affidavit. You have it. Everything is immaculate. You have your points. You have your exhibits. You put in everything that you possibly could put in there to lock this thing down. And you send this to them certified mail with return receipt. But nobody responds. You don't receive anything back. You don't even receive the return receipt back. What are you going to do now? Well, you have to keep in mind that we are making an informal attempt to settle a matter informally. And we are using what's called an administrative process. So what we do when we initially send out our initial affidavits, we want to get our calendar out, mark down the date that we actually sent it. We want to also estimate the date that they should have received it. Whether you got anything back or not, you want to mark that on your calendar, preferably about 3 days after you send it. Then you want to start counting from there to from the third day on to the period of time that they are supposed to respond. If you're giving them 30 days, we'll count 30 days from that date. If you are giving them 14 days, we're counting 14 days from that date. And we want to mark that date down on the calendar, because if they have not responded by sending us the return receipt, they have not responded by rebutting our claim within the time period, the very next day we want to send them a notice of fault and opportunity to cure, giving them an additional 7 to 10 days, whichever you want to use. And then we'll mark that time period down on the calendar, same identical way that we marked down the initial affidavit. Hold on one moment. Area code 904. Tell me who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question or comment. 904.
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes. Loud.
Hello. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I did all of that, affidavit, opportunity, cure, counterclaim, all of that, and still they don't respond. They don't do anything.
Okay.
They just keep proceeding on and on.
All right. Well, what we want to do is keep in mind that we have our contracts in force. This is our baby. This is, we're going to follow our procedure. We're not going to allow their behavior or their lack of response to color anything or alter anything. We're going to simply follow the procedure. So if you sent the initial affidavit, and they didn't send the green card back, or they did send the green card to you, but they didn't
respond. All the green cards
came
back. All the green cards came back.
Okay, so that means they got them. But now we went through the opportunity to cure, and then we did the other one, the notice of default and dishonor. In my opinion, I think that's time enough. So what we will do now is we will send them a notice of complaint to them. We'll file nothing in the court. We'll fill that out, make sure we have all of what we're requesting in damages, which should reflect what's already in your initial affidavit, and get a copy of everything that we have previously sent them and attach that complaint, putting them on notice of the fact that we are prepared to actually file a complaint. Our initial affidavit has not been responded to or rebutted, so therefore it stands as true. Our notice of fault in this opportunity to cure
dishonor
has not been rebutted. The dishonor has not been rebutted, and now we're prepared to file a claim in the court. And here's another opportunity for you to settle this matter with me informally. And if they don't respond in about 3 days after that, then now we can take everything, a copy of everything, and file it into the court, which will in turn examine every effort that you have made to settle this matter informally, and you are now requesting that the court take the matter up and aid you in settling that. Everything is in order. You made every effort.
Everything.
They refused to do anything. They did not deny the documents that were sent to them. Refused them. They accepted them. You got proof of that. You want to add a copy of that to your claim, and clearly showing that you have made every effort to informally settle this matter. That's how you do that.
But they kept it going on until after the trial. The trial, it was a mistrial. And then after the trial, you know, I sent all this paperwork before all this took place. After the trial, the prosecutor resigned his
Okay.
He resigned his suspension of his bar.
Okay.
I don't know why
he would
do that.
It's something that I'm missing. So
yes,
undoubtedly, you've probably pressed for time, and you had to do things on the fly, and you ended up in the courtroom. And you were telling me that it was a mistrial.
Well, see, all of this went in way before the trial even came about. This is my son. All of this came about before the trial even came about. And then they proceeded on. And after the trial, I guess maybe they talked to him and told him that he didn't respond to all those things that were sent, because I got a copy of everything. And I got the originals also. And right after the trial, he rescinded his bar. He no longer works.
He was removed from the bar and fired. Okay.
I guess.
Well, did you request from the court their actions involving the situation? Did you request any information from them? Or did you try to find out exactly what happened to this guy? Because you could have perhaps may have filed a lawsuit. You're saying that they gave you a mistrial?
It was a mistrial in the case. I'll probably call you back another time and tell you about what I'm talking about. But there was a mistrial in the case. They couldn't decide. Okay, and then after the mistrial, the prosecutor just resigned. You know, he didn't acknowledge the paperwork that I had sent, you know, and they don't allow my son to speak at all, period.
Okay.
They wanted to get him a mental evaluation, but he wouldn't consent with the court. He don't consent to anything.
Okay. All right, I see what's going on. While we do this, why don't you give me a call tomorrow?
Okay.
After 10 a.m. in the morning.
That's wonderful.
Okay,
thank you.
Anybody got a question? 310 972-982-4184. We've come to the going into the bottom section here, and I'm going to leave off. I think that we have gotten the gist of this stuff now, how this administrative process works. You want to just keep focused on what you're doing. And no matter what they're sending you about some off-the-wall stuff, we're not concerned about that, because if you send them an affidavit and they have not rebutted the affidavit, it stands as true. We'll go to the next point and then the next point after that, and then we'll send them the complaint and put them on notice of the fact that we are prepared to file this complaint in court. We're trying to make every effort to settle this matter between you and I, and opposed to bringing somebody else, another third party, into this thing. And that's how that goes. And once you do that, then you got stuff in your favor, because it cannot be denied that you have made every effort in your power to settle the situation. And that's what it's all about, getting the situation taken care of and getting the matter settled. Now, we're going to deal with some reincarnation now, and I'm going to run part of this first little segment here, because I found this to be one of the most extraordinary things that I've ever seen, and then we're going to get down into the nuts and bolts and wiggle pins of this situation, because there's a lot of questions about this. I've done extensive research on it, and we're going to come back in the future with some more case studies, because we're looking for evidence about this situation. If you got some evidence, then you can do some things.
Okay? Welcome back. Interesting story I read in the Epoch Times about a month ago. There was a young boy in the Golan Heights who claimed that he knew how he died in his past life. Keep in mind, he's 3 years old. And despite some skepticism, he was apparently able to bring the murderer to justice. So there he is, living in the Golan Heights on the border of Syria and Israel, and he told others in his village that he was murdered with an axe in his past life. So the boy told others he'd been killed by a man with an axe in a past life, and because the people in his community, they were Druze, they took that claim very seriously. So they asked him what else he knew about the life, and the boy reportedly took a group of people to the village where he was born in the previous life, identified his killer, and even led them to the murder weapon. The three-year-old apparently remembered the killer's name, and when they confronted him, the killer denied it but reportedly turned white. Now, to make this story even stranger, the three-year-old allegedly led the others to a body that he says was his past body. And while that may seem a little far-fetched, villagers say the skeleton, get this, the skeleton had a wound in the same area that the young boy had a birthmark. Now, to be honest, I don't believe in reincarnation, but I don't know what to do with this story. We're going to talk about past lives over the next 3 hours with Dr. Elena Gabor, a former doctor of dental medicine who is now a practitioner of something called past regression therapy. Past life regression therapy. It's a technique involving a form of hypnotism that allows the patient to experience, remember what appears to be a memory or memories from previous incarnations. Now, webmaster Lex Lonehood has posted a past life poll in the highlights reel section of coasttocoastam.com. If you go there, you can vote, and it asks you, do you believe you've had past lives and will reincarnate in the future? And so far, 52.74% of you voted yes, 23.87% voted no, 15.35% of you were uncertain, and 8% of you say, I've had past lives, but this is my last one. My conversation with Dr. Eleanor Gabor, author of Home at the Tree of Life, An Introduction to Subconscious Ethereal Science, when Coast to Coast AM continues. After 10 years of practicing as a doctor of dental medicine, Dr. Elena Gabor has redirected her focus towards researching a new field of study, subconscious medicine, the science of the subconscious universe. She's currently practicing medical hypnotherapy in Los Angeles, California, and in Europe, helping thousands of people overcome their life and health challenges and to explore their immortality. And her new book is entitled Home at the Tree of Life, An Introduction to Subconscious Ethereal Science. Dr. Gabor, welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
I'm very good. Hi, Richard. It's very nice to talk to you again. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure, and thank you for spending some time with us here on Coast. Listen, before we get into subconscious ethereal science and what exactly that is, I want to get your take on this remarkable story. There's no other way to describe it. This three-year-old living in the Golan Heights who remembers his past life and is able to identify his murderer and also to locate his body. It's almost beyond comprehension for someone like myself who, as I say, does not subscribe to reincarnation, but I don't know what to make of that story.
Richard, before we begin, I would like to apologize in advance for my pronunciation and perhaps unusual ways of phrasing my ideas. It's because English is not my maternal language. Also, the information I will share with you tonight is based on the knowledge I've accumulated through working with deep hypnosis subjects, people who have the ability to channel information from the universal mind. So I will answer your questions based on that knowledge. Now, about the case you're referring to, children function from their subconscious perspective up to a point where their conscious mind is fully formed. We are not born with a conscious mind. We are born with a subconscious. It takes time for the conscious mind to be formed. So during that time, children have the ability to perceive other lives and talk from that perspective because they function from their subconscious level. And at the subconscious level of the mind, we access with ease other experiences and other lives. What I've learned is that they're not past lives. They're actually simultaneous existences. That time doesn't really exist. It's just a human concept. So the fact that that boy was able to provide information that turned out to be correct is really for that age, it's in a sense normal. There are many psychiatrists who have studied such cases. For example, psychiatrist Ian Stevenson and Gene Tucker, both are university professors, and they published books on this cases, so their opinion is that those experiences are very real.
Okay, we are now officially back, and that is one of the most extraordinary things I've ever heard. When I heard that, I said, oh, I definitely got to let the folks hear about that. That is extraordinary. I wanted to say one more thing before we get down into the cases of this kind of stuff. And I want to finish what I was talking about the exhausting of that administrative process, and that is regardless of whether you got anything back from these people or not, your duty is to exhaust the administrative process. Okay, now you have sent something out, they haven't responded, they haven't this, yada, yada, yada. So now you have gone all the way to the default notice, and you have drawn up your complaint, and still no response, still no rebuttal, still no acknowledgement. So it is at this time now we're officially ready to put everything together that we have previously sent them, including any receipts, which clearly shows that we purchase the green card and had it attached to the envelope, and clearly showing that everything was done in our attempt to informally settle the matter. and now we're officially ready to put the actual complaint into the court's hands, and along with everything, including receipts, even though we may not have gotten a green card back. So when you go to send something, certified mail with return receipt, make sure that you have a receipt clearly showing that you sent this certified mail with return receipt, which had the date, the time of day, the clerk, everything on it. Everybody can be brought to testify. So that's just as valuable as actually getting the green card back, in my opinion, because you have documentation, which is proof and evidence of what you have done. Okay? So I wanted to add that final point so that you can understand how to do this thing. You don't have to panic if they don't respond. The notice of fault and opportunity to cure is inside the library. The notice of fault is dishonor is in the library. The notice of the actual complaint form is there. So you just fill them out, and you're able to go and file them into the court and go from start to finish with the situation. Okay? Now, we're going to get down into a different angle of this reincarnation thing, and I want you to pay close attention because, in my opinion, this is some of the most extraordinary stuff that you will ever hear. And I have went behind this broadcast and gotten onto Google to check it out for myself, and I found the information from several different websites about this stuff. And I took a close look at the comparisons of what they were saying, and I found it to be quite extraordinary. It was very, very interesting and extraordinary for me to do. So I want to share this with you. This segment will last about 30 minutes or so. And if you have any more questions about anything that we've discussed here this evening, go ahead and raise your hand. I'll open up the line so that you can get in. Okay? So y'all are...
And tonight we're going to talk about reincarnation. I'm also going to introduce you to a new reincarnation website, isis.net. Now, there's a link at coasttocoastam.com, and if you can, I'd like you to follow along with us on that website. I'll tell you why when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Walter Simkew is a board-certified occupational medicine physician, practices at a major medical center in San Francisco. He has served as the assistant chief of the occupational medicine staff. Walter has started researching reincarnation. That was back in 1995. He has authored many books on the subject: Born Again, Origin of the Soul and the Purpose of Reincarnation, Return of the Revolutionaries, The Case for Reincarnation and Soul Groups Reunited. He's going to announce a brand new website as well that you can participate and follow along with. He was last on with me almost 8 years ago. Walter, we could have reincarnated by that time, huh?
You're right.
How are you?
Very good, thank you.
What's new? In these 8 years, what have you been up to?
Well, the primary thing that I've been doing, well, first of all, I've had books published in several different countries. I received a very warm reception in India where I was featured on CNN and have been cited in the Times of India a number of times, and had done two book tours in India, also had a book published in Indonesia and did a tour there, also had books in Serbia done. And what I've done really for the most part is focus on bringing the work of Ian Stevenson to the mainstream, to make it accessible.
Perfect.
And I've done a new version of the Born Again book, which really focuses heavily on Stevenson. It's available as an e-book now. And also creating the ISIS website, and there's two I's in front of ISIS, isis.net, so that people all around the world can have access to this information, because I really do see it as changing the world in a fundamental way. But because Ian Stevenson wrote in such an academic style, almost like a lawyer, he would cite cases and state which witness said what. He put some information in tables, some in narratives, and the result is, even though the evidence, he did that to showcase the strength of the evidence. He even would have subjects take lie detector tests, but because of the way he wrote, it's very difficult to read. And so what I'm doing on the ISIS website is taking Stevenson cases and putting them into easy-to-read stories so that anybody can have access to them.
Super. Stevenson died, of course, 5 years ago. He was a Canadian biochemist, and he did most of his work in this area at the University of Virginia, didn't he?
Correct. He worked over a period of 40 years, and he studied about 3,000 children who spontaneously remembered past lives. And he chose only to study children because he thought that there was a much less chance of fabrication of memories. And in the typical Ian Stevenson case, as soon as a child could speak, the child would start reciting facts about a past lifetime. He would tell the biologic parents that you're not my parents, and my name is not what you're calling me, and this is not my village, and my village is called so-and-so, and my parents, their names are so-and-so. And the child would spontaneously give so much information to the biologic parents that they could actually identify the past life family. And when the child was reunited with the past life family, the child could identify relatives by name,
jeez,
know things that nobody outside the family knew. And typically the past life family would accept the child as the reincarnation of their deceased loved one.
What got Stevenson Walter so interested in this? I mean, here's a guy who was a biochemist,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden he's fascinated by reincarnation. He wants to investigate it.
Yeah. My understanding is that his mother was a theosophist, so theosophists do believe in reincarnation, and so I believe he was raised with that mindset. But then what happened is that the individual who invented the Xerox process, Chester Carleton, approached the University of Virginia and I guess somehow heard about these child reincarnation cases, or perhaps Stevenson had told him about it, and Carleton gave the university $1 million and said, this money is to provide an endowment so that Ian Stevenson can do reincarnation research full time. And that's what he did. For 40 years, he went all over the world studying these children with spontaneous memories.
You'd like people to go to the ISIS.net website now to kind of follow along as we chat for the next couple hours. Tell us why, Walter.
Well, one of the things that reincarnation research shows is that people have similar facial features from lifetime to lifetime. And when you put the combination of a child spontaneously remembering a past lifetime and then find out they also look exactly like the person that they were in the past incarnation, all of a sudden, you know, this evidence of reincarnation is much more tangible. I mean, it's a picture tells 1,000 words. And so on the ISIS website, we have about 40 Stevenson cases posted. This is a work in progress. I'm going to keep posting more until what I'd like to do is get them all up. And we have 14 Stevenson cases that involve physical resemblance from lifetime to another, 5 cases with image comparisons, and another 9 where physical resemblance was noted in the report, but Stevenson did not provide images. So one advantage of looking at the website as we go along is that people can see the pictures of people before and after.
Give us an overview of ISIS exactly as a nonprofit organization dedicated to reincarnation research.
Yeah. So the again, one of the primary focuses is to disseminate the work of Ian Stevenson around the world. And not only is it important because it helps us really understand what life is about, but what we find is that these cases, including Stevenson cases, show that we can change religion, race, ethnicity, and nationality from lifetime to lifetime. And this has tremendous societal significance. If people knew that they could be born Jewish in one lifetime and Muslim in another, Israeli in one lifetime, Palestinian in another, Sunni in one lifetime, and Shiite in another, then people would stop fighting about it. You know, what happens is that our identities are based really on these cultural markers, you know, what religion we're born into, what nationality, what ethnicity, and we identify with that to the point that we're, you know, willing to kill each other over it, and we identify with our group so strongly that, again, this separates us and leads to wars. And what evidence of reincarnation will do in the future is it'll make people think differently about themselves. You know, they're going to realize, you know, I'm actually a universal human, and I can change nationality, and I can change religion, and these things really aren't worth fighting about. Now, the key, though, is that it doesn't do any good if just one group of people knows about this, you know, English-speaking people in the U.S. I mean, you need to disseminate this information to people of all cultures. You know, people in Iran need to know about this, in Iraq, and wherever there's conflict. I mean, we have representatives already for ISIS in a dozen countries, including Iran, and there's even a very brave young man who has already done translation for us. It hasn't been posted yet. But, you know, I've even sort of expressed concern for him. Are you sure you ought to be identified on the website? And he says yes. And so one of the other purposes of ISIS, the website has already been programmed for translation in 40 languages, and we've just started doing a little
good
translation. But it's to make this information available to all people.
We're going to talk about a lot of cases. I want to get your take on reincarnation, Walter, why and how you think it works. But as we look at some of the work that you've been doing in this research, you have also looked at cases with Kevin Ryerson. Let's talk about Kevin a little bit. And what are these cases?
Okay. Well, what happened was back in 2000 or so, I was working on cases where people would approach me with cases and I wouldn't know how to sort them out. I mean, the Ian Stevenson cases are really indisputable. I mean, they stand on their own. But people would approach me with cases and about who they thought they were, and I didn't really know how to judge whether they were valid cases or not. And I started to meet with various psychics and mediums, trying to see if anybody had the ability to make accurate past life matches. And none of them could, on a reliable basis, in my judgment, until I met Kevin Ryerson, who's the trance medium who works with Shirley MacLaine.
Okay, that's where the name comes from.
Yeah.
All right.
And he's in four of her books, and he appeared as himself in the movie Out on a Limb. And so what I found is it's easy for anybody to speculate on a case involving famous people. You know, somebody can think, you know, maybe I was Cleopatra or maybe I was George Washington, and anybody can say yes or no.
You know, one of the criticisms, too, from a lot of people who doubt reincarnation, they always say everybody says they were someone important. You know, you not everybody could be important, right?
Correct, and most of the time, people who think they were famous were not, and the most common reason that people do that is simply it makes us feel better about ourselves. You know, we all want to feel special, that you know we're important, and if we don't have that feeling about ourselves in the current lifetime, then we can hope that we were somebody famous before and we did something important in the world. But most of the time, it's not true. There are other reasons why that can happen. The most common is what I call landmark associations, where an individual knew the famous person in a past lifetime, and they get an intuition about that famous person, or a psychic tells them that they were this famous person, but in reality, they just knew the person or worked with the person, you know, were an associate.
Kevin channels a spirit guide named what? Atun Ray?
Atun Ray, yeah. And I'll give you an example of what made me start to believe in him is that I would ask Atun Ray about past life cases where I had no hypothesis. An example involves the Carl Sagan case. And what happened is I was researching cases from the time of the American Revolution, and I read about an individual named David Rittenhouse. And all I knew about Rittenhouse was that he lived in Philadelphia, was considered American revolutionary, and he helped Thomas Paine edit the pamphlet Common Sense. That's all I knew about him. And I asked Atun Ray, has he reincarnated in contemporary times? And Atun Ray told me, yes, he was Carl Sagan. Now, at the time, I thought that could not be true because I had already realized that people tend to do similar things in life, one lifetime to another. We bring talents through and usually oftentimes pursue the same path. So why, I thought, would a little-known American revolutionary named David Rittenhouse come back as the world's most famous astronomer? And I thought Atun Ray must be wrong. And this was at a time back in 2001 before the Internet was used. I mean, the search engines just weren't good. And you had to research things the old-fashioned way through books. Well, in all the books that I had, I couldn't find more information about Rittenhouse. And it took a period of time, but eventually I found a book that indicated that he actually was America's first astronomer. And he built the first telescope in America, built a replica of the solar system that was accurate based on his observations, built an orrery, which is a prototype to a planetarium. But I still couldn't find a portrait, so I didn't know if there was a facial match. What happened is in November 2001, I went to visit Ian Stevenson, and I spent a day with him in Charlottesville. And I did the tourist things, and I went to Monticello, and I also went to James Madison's home. And Madison had an extensive collection of portraits of people from the American Revolution, and there's the first time I saw a portrait of David Rittenhouse. And guess what? He has the same face as Carl Sagan.
Isn't that amazing?
It is. And Atun Ray has done this over and over where he's told me who somebody was in a past lifetime or who somebody in the past is in contemporary times. And he has an encyclopedic scope of knowledge. It's amazing. I mean, I've worked with Kevin and Atun Ray now for 10 years. I usually have at least two sessions a month. So, I mean, I talk with Atun Ray more than I do with my own brother. You know?
He's become a chum of yours, huh?
I consider him one of my best friends. And he has an amazing fund of knowledge. He's very compassionate. He hardly, you know, he doesn't put anybody down. If there's somebody I'm upset with and explain it to him, he always sees, he understands the other person's point of view and can explain it in a way that makes sense. And so he has great wisdom, and he also has a great sense of humor. He always says something to lighten it up and jokes in every session. So
when you wrote the book Origin of the Soul,
mm-hmm.
was that the first interview we did with you back in 2004?
No. That book was Return of the Revolutionaries.
That one. Okay.
Yeah. And then since then, in 2006, the first version of Born Again was written, and that was for the Indian audience. And then in 2008, I did Origin of the Soul and Purpose of Reincarnation, which is based on my dialogues with Atun Ray. So I kind of realized, you know, at first my focus was on really trying to showcase reincarnation cases that provide evidence of reincarnation.
Now, this channeled spirit,
mm-hmm.
Atun Ray, what is he telling you, Walter? Is he telling you things about the future, about things to avoid, or just guidance? What's he telling you?
Well, what I did in Origin of the Soul is I just asked him about the big picture of reincarnation. I mean, when were souls created? Why do we reincarnate? How many lifetimes do we have? When does reincarnation stop? What's the nature of the spiritual world? That sort of thing.
All right. Well, you've done a very efficient job with this. How come not a lot of scientists or physicians pick up and believe and accept the notion of reincarnation?
Well, I think simply because they have not been exposed to the evidence. And, you know, I had a sort of a funny experience in India where reincarnation is accepted by people who are religious. But the scientific community in India is like the scientific community here in the U.S., where they perceive it as a belief system. And what happened, because in India the population is interested in this, within a week I was on CNN in India and presented these cases, and now I've been told by colleagues that things are changing in India because the cases are making people aware, including scientists, that there is hard evidence for this. And I think really the problem is the same thing I mentioned in the beginning about why Stevenson is unknown, is that the evidence is pretty inaccessible. But once people...
Yet he studied 2,500 cases.
Yeah, he studied 2,500 cases. He validated about 1,000. And by
hold on for a second, Walter. We'll come right back as we talk about reincarnation. This is going to be one of those coast-to-coast rides. Stand by and hold on. Our guest tonight, Dr. Walter Simkew. Walter, before we get into some of the work of Ian Stevenson, let's talk about reincarnation. Give me your definition of what you believe it is.
Well, reincarnation is when a soul incarnates into a physical body.
Why?
Well, the reason that we reincarnate, and I'm now speaking, you know, based on what Atun Ray, my spirit guide, or my spirit being friend tells me, is basically to grow. You know, it's not that much different than a child going to school. And just as we start as infants that are helpless, that don't have many skills, we may be attached to God, just like a child is attached to their parents. The child is not self-sufficient or autonomous. And so we reincarnate basically to develop skills, to learn lessons, to become mature spirit beings. And then once we reach a certain level of development, reincarnation is optional. And one thing that actually I found surprising that Atun Ray told me, I always thought that from the Buddhist model that a very small percentage of people are what are called bodhisattvas, people who come back voluntarily. I thought it was less than 1% or so. But Atun Ray says it's more like 20%. So like 20% of us now reincarnate voluntarily because we want to help. So it's a combination of our own personal growth as a soul, but then also we feel a responsibility to the rest of humanity. So even if we don't have to come back, souls do come back because they care.
Tell me about the Laurel and Hardy cases.
Well, this is a set of cases which I have a number of core cases on the ISIS website, which to me demonstrate Atun Ray's ability to make accurate matches. And I mentioned the Carl Sagan case as one of them.
Mm-hmm.
The Laurel and Hardy cases are another set of great cases. And what happened is once I realized that Atun Ray could make accurate matches, I started to ask about all my favorite people in history. And I always loved Laurel and Hardy. So I asked about them, and Atun Ray would not tell me. And normally he will tell me if I, you know, have interest. But he said, no, it's not time, basically, which peeved me. And what I did is I kept on trying to guess or hypothesize who they might be. So I would guess Ben Stiller, maybe he's the skinny one, Stan, and Drew Carey, perhaps he was Ollie. And Atun Ray told me over and over, maybe after 10 hypotheses, no, each time. And I sort of forgot about it or gave up, and a year and a half went by. And at that point, a synchronistic thing happened. My nurse at work put in a Rolling Stone magazine in one of my exam rooms, and it said, Hot New Comedy Team. And I looked through the whole magazine, and I could not find the article. But I went and I Googled Hot New Comedy Team, maybe thinking this is them. And Josh and Danny Bacher showed up, and they showed up on the internet as a Hot New Comedy Team because they were doing their first off-Broadway show in New York. And I looked at them, and I immediately knew that was them. I mean, they looked like them. Yeah, very much so. But that's all I knew about them, that they were going to do this show. They had a website, but there was nothing on the website about Laurel and Hardy or anything to make me think that how they would react to being told they're Laurel and Hardy. So I called them out of the blue from San Francisco to New Jersey, where they live, and I did it through the theater. I told the theater I want to talk to them because I know some people in L.A., and that got Danny, the Ollie person, interested, and he called me. And I first started to explain a little bit about the reincarnation work that I was doing. I could tell, you know, there was silence on the other end, and I wasn't getting very far. So finally I blurted out that I've been working with Kevin Ryerson, and you and your brother have been identified as the reincarnation of Laurel and Hardy.
Did he freak out?
Well, there was silence. And then he said, I don't know about reincarnation, but Laurel and Hardy have been the biggest influences in our lives.
How about that?
And one thing that we see over and over in Ian Stevenson cases, as well as other independently cases, is that people repeat behavior.
There's synergy there, isn't there?
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of what we were talking about earlier, that we... life is a school, and we build upon what we've achieved before. And it turns out that ever since they were little, and I knew none of this, what I'm telling you now, I knew none of this at the time that I contacted them. It turns out that ever since they were children, they pretended they were Laurel and Hardy. Danny would put a little fake mustache to be Ollie. They created, actually, a reincarnation TV pilot that's on the website called Reincarnation Exploration, where we have interviews with their parents. And the father is a trial attorney, you know, so he's not a fool. And on this video, the father is saying how they constantly pretended that they were Laurel and Hardy. It was no other comedy team. It was always Laurel and Hardy.
How strange.
He got... they would go to the mall and, you know, they would do all these Laurel and Hardy antics to the point where the father said, I don't want Laurel and Hardy. I want my boys back. Then when they were little kids, when they saved up enough money from their paper route, they bought a movie camera. And then they started to do slapstick movies as little kids. And they would throw dummies out the window and film it just like they do in slapstick movies.
Yeah.
And on the video, the mother is saying how the neighbors would call them and say, you know, there's awful strange things going on at your house. And then they would have to discipline Josh and Danny, and they said they disciplined them often. Then when they got their first automobile as teenagers, they made a tape of Laurel and Hardy movie music, and they would drive around Manhattan and New Jersey playing Laurel and Hardy theme music. Then... they went for this off-Broadway play or show. They created their own silent movie, which is also featured on the website, which is hilarious. It's a classic slapstick silent movie. And I point out, how many young comedians these days create their own silent movie? And then the real kicker is that Danny is a world-class collector of Laurel and Hardy memorabilia, and he has actual clothing that Stan and Ollie wore at their home.
Way before you even knew them.
I didn't know exactly. And so when I called Danny to tell him that he's Ollie, he's actually got a pair of Ollie's pants from the movie Way Out West hanging on his wall under glass.
So he's got to say, there's something weird here.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just too much fits.
Yeah, too much.
And they've now done, you know, they're doing something wise.
And you've got a picture of them up on your website.
Yeah, it's the same. I mean, Josh and Danny look, Josh and Stan look almost identical. And Danny has the same facial features as Ollie, except Ollie is about 100 pounds heavier. That's the only difference.
Isn't it amazing?
Oh, and then there's all these other synchronicities, which it's in that pilot they did. But, for instance, Danny's girlfriend has a cat, and guess what the cat's name is? Ollie. you know, they've now done events with me over the years many times. And even though they wisely won't say we believe we're Laurel and Hardy, because that would subject them to...
That's ridicule. Something they would, unfortunately.
But you know, they wouldn't be cooperating so much if they didn't think there was something to it. And their parents are cooperating. I mean, I told you, their father is an attorney, and he and their mother are on the TV pilot explaining all this. So to them, they don't have any other explanation. And it reminds me also, another case that's on the website is the reincarnation of Picasso. And we've identified her as a young woman named Alexandra Nikita, who, ever since she was a child, started to do art like Picasso. When she was 3 or 4 years old, she started to draw faces with figures with two faces and four eyes. And by the age of 8, she had her first art show, and the media dubbed her the Petite Picasso because she had mastered cubism and Picasso-like art. And similarly, I contacted her mother at the time the Born Again book came out and explained what I was doing with Kevin, and that we believe that her daughter is the reincarnation of Picasso. And the mother was sympathetic and said, you know, I don't know how else to explain this.
Here we go again, right?
Yeah. And in these cases, we're looking at, you know, gifted people who are replicating talent. But in the Stevenson cases, we see it on a small scale. Stevenson didn't study anybody who was famous. You know, all the cases are...
they were just people.
Just villagers and so forth. But, for instance, there's a case involving a woman named, or a girl named Blanche Bautista. And what happened was that in the prior lifetime, she had lived in Spain, but they had a French nanny. And the nanny taught the little girl a French lullaby, which the little girl learned and could sing in French. Well, this little girl died at a young age, at 3 years of age or so, and then the parents had another child, and they realized this child is just like our prior child, and they started to wonder if this might be the reincarnation of their prior child. And guess what? The new child spontaneously was able to sing the French lullaby that nobody taught her in the contemporary lifetime.
That is amazing. Let's talk a little bit about Stevenson's work now. You say he studied 2,500 cases of children.
Yeah.
1,000 actively validated. Explain that. What is the validation process?
So what he did is, when he heard about one of these child cases, he would travel there, and he would try to meet with the child before the child was even reunited with the past life family. That was his ideal case, so that he could witness the whole thing. And what he defined as a solved case or validated case is when the statements made by the child were all validated by the past life family. So, meaning that they were able to actually locate the past life family, get witnesses, document what the child said, what was accurate, what was not accurate, which identifications the child made for relatives from the past lifetime, which were accurate, which were not. So he was a very meticulous researcher, and when he could actually you know, show that the child remembered things that the past life family could validate. He called that a solved case. And there's one case that perhaps I could cite, and if listeners would like to follow along, it's the case of Suzanne Ghanem. So if you go to the website, there's on the left side an alphabetical index of cases.
Okay.
And if you just go down the list under Paul Gauguin, there's Anne Frank, Paul Gauguin, and then Suzanne Ghanem, and it says an Ian Stevenson consistent facial feature case. And this case is typical of Stevenson cases, and it's really special because it allowed Stevenson to observe a case over time, over a period of 20 or 30 years, where he actually was able to witness how the reincarnated individual came to look exactly as she did in the prior incarnation. And the story is that Hannon Mansour was born in Lebanon back in the 30s. She got married, had three kids. After the third child, she developed heart valve problems and had to have surgery. They couldn't do it in Lebanon, so she went to Virginia, where she had a brother living there. The day before surgery, she called tried to call multiple times home, and in particular, she wanted to speak to her daughter, whose name was Layla. She couldn't get through, told her brother, if anything happens to me and I don't make it through surgery, divide my jewelry between my daughters. The next day she had surgery, the following day she died. Only 10 days later, Suzanne Ghanem was born. And before she was taught to read or write, she scribbled a number on a piece of paper, and it was the Mansour's phone number with just two digits transposed. As a toddler, she would lift the phone off the hook and ask for Layla. The family didn't know a Layla, so the parents said, "Who's Layla?" And Suzanne said, "That was my daughter." And they said, "What are you talking about?" And she said, "Ask me later when my head is bigger." And sure enough, within a year or so, she mentioned a dozen family members by name. She mentioned what her own name was, Hannon Mansour. She named her husband's name, Farouk. She said where they lived before and gave enough information to her parents that they were able to locate the past life family, the Mansours. And Suzanne then was able to identify a dozen family members by name accurately. And her husband from the past lifetime, Farouk, who was a police officer, who was initially very skeptical, came to believe that this little five-year-old girl is the reincarnation of his deceased wife, because he could show her pictures of them at social events, and she could name their friends specifically by name.
And how would she know?
Yeah. Well, Stevenson studied her back in the late 60s or 70s, and then in 1998, he went back to Lebanon with Tom Schroeder, a reporter from the Washington Post. And Schroeder was writing a book about Stevenson, which eventually was published as the book Old Souls. And he went to see how Stevenson researched new cases, but they also revisited a couple of cases that Stevenson studied before, including Suzanne Ghanem. And so now Suzanne is in her mid-20s or so, and Stevenson realized that she looks exactly like she did as Hannon Mansour.
Why the facial feature resemblances? And we'll get into birthmarks next hour, but it's uncanny, as you were mentioning, you know, the Josh and Danny situation. So many other people, they have that resemblance of the person that they may have reincarnated from. How come?
Well, you know, we don't know for sure, but based on what I believe and also in my discussions with my spirit friend, Atun Ray, the soul projects an energy template or a hologram into the developing body. And just like orthopedic surgeons use bone or use electric current or bone stimulators to shape bone in bad fractures, I think that this energy template, that the physical body shapes around it. And it's an interplay between the genetics of your family, of your racial heritage, ethnic heritage. It's an interplay between that template and your hereditary background that results in how you look. And some supporting evidence that we have is we actually have a photograph on the ISIS site of what appears to be a spirit coming out of the body of a deceased young man. And it's under the link spirit beings and then spirit photos.
All right, I got to take a look at that. Hold on, Walter. We're going to hit this break, and we're going to come back in just a moment to talk about reincarnation, the facial features, birthmarks appear. They were on the person who died years ago, and then they're on the new person. How does that happen?
Okay, Moose, we're back. Quite interesting, I must say. If anybody got any questions about this stuff or if you have some comments, the number to dial in, once again, is 310-982-4184. Let me know what's on your mind or what you think about anything that we have discussed here this evening. And I'll open up the line so you can get
moving in. Moving the burdens of death gives us a freedom unmatched. Peace of mind is something that's very vital to our health. Not only do we want to concentrate on growing our own food and contributing to nutrition, but we also want to free our mind from the burden of stress. Stress is a killer. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Look at the items we have there. Before making any selections, you can give me a call. If you have problems with your student loan, if you got a situation with the Internal Revenue Service, mortgage, or whatever it is, go to newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Remove the... Hi, I'm Tahaka Amanuel Bay. There's some very important things that we need to consider when dealing with police stops. First of all, does failure to wear a seatbelt constitute a breach of the peace? Is it a public nuisance? Is there an injured party? If a policeman stops you, is he an officer of the law? Has he taken a public oath of office? Is he a public official? Criminal impersonation in the first degree is a felony. In order to exercise your freedom of rights successfully, contact me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now send an email, tahaka53@hotmail.com.
Okay, we're back. Now, I have heard of and been told a lot of different situations involving this stuff way back in the early 60s. But when you hear this kind of stuff, you don't think anything about it because it's something that you are not accustomed to on a daily basis. You look at the person as if there's something going on crazy with you. This ain't real. You just making this up. I don't know why you saying this, but it's nothing that I can identify with. So therefore, I'm not going to entertain anything about it. But I've always found it fascinating and extraordinary when people would make certain statements about people that we know beyond any shadow of a doubt that's passed on, they're gone, they're dead and stuff. So we chalk up things to say, well, she's just missing that person. He's just having nightmares. He don't know what he's talking about. She just, this is just a bunch of junk. and we just dismiss things. However, when you keep experiencing things and hearing things and from different angles and from different people in different settings and time periods from different circumstances, in my opinion, I think you should do an evaluation. If you know you heard this stuff back when you was first able to understand and you heard something about this, and then later on you became a teenager and you're someplace else and you heard it from a whole different angle, and then later on you got grown and you heard it from somebody else that you really care about in a whole different set of circumstances, and then you hear it again, and we be faced with, wow, I done heard this before and over and over, and I'm wondering, I don't know what to do about it. I'm scared to even know whether or not is something like this real. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to be quiet about the whole thing, and I'm not going to worry about it. And I think what happens is a lot of us take this position because Lord knows I have heard this kind of stuff face-to-face, and people have told me and have tried to convince me about what they have seen and what they have experienced in regards to this kind of stuff. And but this is too big. We can't go running around saying nothing about this kind of stuff like right here because people think there's something wrong with us. Because you know how we think and we're disconnected from spiritual sides and we haven't done any research and all this. So we have had many of us who have lived our whole lifetime and actually heard this kind of stuff. And because we didn't know what to do about it, we were scared to repeat it. We have probably even experienced some things ourselves, but we ain't talking about it. So what I'm doing here tonight is we putting out some more of this stuff right here. And if you have a question, and I know this is a long shot, but if you would like to call in or raise your hand and tell me about your experience, now is the time. I'll open up the line so you can get right on in here and tell me right on about it right now. Here's the opportunity. Number to call is 310-982-4184. Just go ahead. Don't be shy. Don't be afraid. You go on and talk about it. It's going to be all right, you know, because I had some experiences. In fact, I hadn't talked about it in a long time, but I did talk about it today, where I was just a kid. I was in elementary school, but I remember that, and it happened over and over and over, and I never forgot it. And I would be asleep, and right before I actually wake up, I can hear all these children playing. They're running and playing up and down the street. They're playing ball. They're laughing and giggling, and I don't ever remember hearing one of these children being sad about anything. I mean, it's just like a regular day, and we're playing. Just a regular day. But then when I wake up and I go outside, there's nobody there. And I'm trying to figure out what was that. And I mean, I would experience this kind of stuff over and over and over. I don't know if I was half in the physical realm or half in the spiritual realm, but I know one thing. I know doggone well. I heard these children playing this day. They was having a good time, and it was a lot of them. And they was just running and playing and stuff. But then when I woke up, I said, I'm going to go outside and see where they at. And when I go outside and I go around the house, I go down and look down the street, ain't nobody out there. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, we can't tell nobody about this. But I have had some extraordinary things, and I'm pretty sure that some of you out there have experienced some of the same stuff. And but you just ain't talking about this stuff, and you don't know what to do about it. You don't know where it come from. You heard a whole lot of stuff. You've been searching for answers and all of this, but you never got to any conclusion about any of it.
Our special guest tonight, Walter Simkus. We talk about reincarnation later tonight. We'll take your phone calls and stories on reincarnation as well. More to talk with him about, though, when I come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with Dr. Walter Simkus as we talk about some of these more incredible reincarnation cases. Facial features, let's talk a little bit more about that before we get into birthmarks. So it seems to be that this is pretty prevalent, isn't it?
Yes. And as I mentioned, there are five of the Stevenson cases with images on the website. And there's another nine where physical resemblances reported in the Stevenson cases, though the images were not provided. And then we have another dozen independently researched cases on the ISIS website that show very distinct physical resemblance.
All right. Now, what about birthmarks? They seem to appear as well.
Well, the theory seems to be is that there's an energy body, some you can call it the etheric body or whatever one you want to call it, but an energy body that underlies the physical body. And there is some evidence of this. We have a image of a what appears to be a spirit coming out of a deceased young man's body. What happened is these teenagers were on a car ride in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. One of them was trying to move up to the front seat, and the car went out of control, hit a tree, and that young man was killed instantly.
Oh, geez.
A state patrolman came by, realized that the boy was dead, and then called for backup and started to take photographs of the accident scene. He turned the camera into the lab at the police station, and the police lab developed the pictures and called him and said, there's something really strange here. And what the images showed was what appeared to be the spirit of the boy floating above the car. And the spirit image was not a passive image. He's like shouting. His mouth is wide open in kind of a tense pose. I mean, it really looks like he's shouting. And Echo Bodine, what happened is the state trooper didn't know what to do with these pictures, so he gave them to Echo Bodine, who's a respected clairvoyant in the Minnesota area, and she let me use them. But the Echo says what the boy is doing is shouting no, that he wasn't ready to die. And because it's such a dynamic pose, it really can't be, say, a double exposure, because at the time this picture was taken, the boy is slumped over face down on the seat. Yet the spirit above the car is in a very dynamic pose, shouting. And the spirit image looks exactly like the boy did. So this is one little piece of evidence that it looks like we do have a spirit body that parallels the physical body. Another source of evidence is called instrumental transcommunication, where spirits use electronic means to communicate with human beings.
Yeah.
And one of the researchers who was involved in this was named Frederick Jurgensen, and he got involved in it accidentally. He was into recording bird songs, and once he took a tape of songs from nature that he had recorded, was playing it back, and all of a sudden his mother's voice appears on the tape and calls him by his pet name, Friedrich, you are being watched. And he knew that, you know, it was impossible for her to have been recorded on that because she was dead. And that got him interested in it and worked on it for years. Then when he was about to die, he told his friend, during my funeral, go home, turn on your TV, I'm going to try to project an image on the television during my own funeral. And that's exactly what happened. And there's an image that we have on the ISIS website where you can see the image of Jurgensen projecting this image from the spirit world, where he looks exactly like he does in the physical world. So there are some pieces of evidence that seem to support this. Just like the physical body responds to this energy template, it appears that physical trauma can impact the energy body.
Mm-hmm.
So that in a subsequent lifetime, typically what Stevenson found is that if somebody had a stab wound or a bullet wound from the prior incarnation, in the next lifetime, they would have a birthmark or scar in that same spot. So it appears like the energy template that the soul projects was able to retain that trauma.
We have heard cases, Walter, where family members have done some role reversals, so that my thoughts are, in reincarnation, most of the people that you're associated with in your present life, you probably might have been associated with them in the past life. Is that true?
That's true. And in fact, you know, there's a Ian Stevenson twin study that hardly anybody knows about. And the reason is because it's in his 2,000-page book, you know, that very few souls will ever try to, you know, go through. But Stevenson studied 31 sets of twins where their cases were solved. And remember, we said the solved cases were where he could interview witnesses and validate that the child's past life memories were accurate. And so he had 31 sets of twins with validated past lifetimes, so we're talking about 62 people. In 100% of the cases, the twins had significant past life relationships, in 100%. The most common past life relationship was siblings. The next most common was friends or business associates. And the next most common was being spouses. So we had talked about the Laurel and Hardy cases. Well, Laurel and Hardy were best friends and business partners, and they've reincarnated as brothers. Well, Stevenson's twin study categorically shows that souls plan lifetimes so that they can be reunited with loved ones through reincarnation.
And you believe that? I do.
Well, it's, again, to me, this is sort of an irrefutable study. And again, it's a study that hardly anybody knows about.
That's great work by Stevenson.
Yeah.
Did he do a lot of this by himself?
Well, he you know, was the one who organized the information, but wherever he went, he worked with other academic colleagues.
Who was Jim Tucker?
Jim Tucker has taken over for Ian Stevenson. Stevenson died in 2007. Jim Tucker is another psychiatrist, MD, at the University of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he started in 2006. And it's very significant. At some point, we might want to talk about the James Leninger case, another case which definitively shows that people look the same from lifetime to lifetime.
Sure, right.
And it's another case that we've gotten to observe over time. But one thing that I'm very happy about is that Jim Tucker has appeared on national television with James Leninger, and on national television, he stated that there is now sufficient evidence to conclude that reincarnation exists. So this is a university professor now coming out with a very strong statement. So, again, I think the momentum is growing.
Well, that's good. That is a good thing. Let's talk a little bit more now about some of Stevenson's work, and then we'll get into some other cases. I want to ask you about this little boy in Chicago. You've heard about that, who claims to have been a World War II pilot.
Okay, yeah, so James Leninger, he's actually from Louisiana, and he had spontaneous... What happened to him, he was born to Christian parents, and in fact, his father describes that he's an evangelical Christian. And what happened is that this little boy, James Leninger, started to have nightmares and would start screaming and saying, little man can't get out, little man can't come out, get out. And his parents would rush to his bed and try to understand what's happening. And he started to give, they would ask him questions, and he gave more information. He said that he was in a plane, he couldn't get out of the plane. The father asked, well, where did your plane fly from? He said, from a boat. And what was the name of your boat? He said, the Natoma. The little boy seemed to have this unusual knowledge of World War II aircraft, and he would say that the Japanese planes were called Zeke's or Tony's. His father then would, you know, research this on the internet and find that everything he was saying is true. And he thought, how could he possibly know all this information? You know, he certainly was not learning it on Sesame Street. And just like a typical Stevenson case, little James gave enough information that they were able to locate who he was in a past lifetime. He was a man named James Houston. And little James even remembered the name of his best friend on the Natoma Bay, the aircraft carrier that he flew from, and that best friend's name was James Larson, or Jack Larson, and eventually little James was reunited with Jack Larson at an Natoma Bay reunion. And his parents, this is kind of a bittersweet thing, his parents thought he would be happy to see these people that he knew in a past lifetime, but he seemed very sad.
He was sad.
Why?
Yeah.
They said, because they all seemed so old. But the Lil James knew so much detail. He was reunited with James Houston's past, James Houston's sister, Ann Barron. And Lil James knew all sorts of specific information that nobody outside of the family knew. For instance, he knew that their father was alcoholic, that their mother worked as a maid for some of the rich people in town, and their sister was a society writer and was horrified when their mom, you know, started to work for one of the people she was writing about. Lil James knew that they had matching portraits done, gave so much information that Anne accepted him as the reincarnation of her deceased brother. Well, the Leninger case was first featured in 2005 on ABC Primetime.
That's right.
When he was only 5 years old.
He was a little guy, yeah.
Little guy. And at that time, you know, I predicted that, you know, he would grow to look like James Houston. Well, what happened is just this last January, the father, Bruce Leninger, we had been in communication. We actually gave the Leningers the ISIS Award. We give an award to each year to somebody who has contributed significantly to objective evidence of reincarnation, so we were in touch. And Bruce sends me a picture of James as he is now at 12 years of age. He's singing now, and James Houston, by the way, was a good singer. Now James is singing in school musicals. Neither one of his parents has talent in singing. But he sent me the picture of James as he is now, along with James Houston, and said, you know, my wife thinks there's a resemblance here, but I'm not sure. What do you think? And one of the things that you have to do is really size pictures.
They got to be the same with the same frown and everything, right?
Yeah, you have to have the poses need to be the same. You size them the same. I generally take the color out so the color doesn't confuse people.
Mm-hmm.
But now the picture that we have on the ISIS site, it's clear that Little James Leninger looks just like James Houston.
See, now let's bring in spirituality for just a moment here, Walter.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be something out there that is doing this. This is not a, you know, universal thing that has just happened by fluke when the planets and the solar systems and the stars and suns and all these things develop. There's got to be a plan behind this, don't you think?
Yes, and you know, further, there's many cases that show that spirit beings are helping solve these cases and trying to get the information out. And there's a whole section on the ISIS site under spirit beings. There's a section called spirit involvement in reincarnation cases, where it's either clear or through inference, spirit beings are helping solve these cases. I can give one example.
Please, yeah.
Involving Robert Snow, who's a retired police captain. He was in charge of homicide, organized crime, so, you know, very grounded individual. And he was at a party with other police officers, and there was a female officer who had been involved with past life regressions. And she was talking about it, and Bob sort of dismissed it and said, people just make that stuff up, the memories up. And so she got mad at him and said, oh, yeah, big shot, well, why don't you have a regression and see what happens? And he said, sure, I'll do it. Of course, he never meant to, but she kept hounding him and finally said, well, what, are you scared? And that finally made him go and have the regression. And he didn't expect anything to happen. But during the regression, he tapped into this past lifetime where he was painting a portrait of a hunchback woman. And he said the experience was more real than waking consciousness. And he says he remembers doing every brush stroke, and he was remembered thinking to himself, why does this woman want a portrait? She's got this deformity. And he remembered how he hated doing portraits, and he only did it to make money. And he had a studio that had skylights on the ceiling and a row of windows that looked out on tall buildings in a major city. And he had 30 specific memories of what happened in that lifetime. After the regression, he was baffled by this. He didn't believe in reincarnation, and he was trying to rationalize what happened to him, and he thought, well, I must have just learned about this artist who did the hunchback woman portrait sometime in the past, and this memory just surfaced during the regression. And for a year, he investigated trying to find this portrait painter with the hunchback woman painting. And again, he's a professional detective, but after a year, he found
nothing
and gave up. Well, at about that time, his wife said, you know, our anniversary's coming up, let's go to New Orleans. And he said, sure. And on the last day that they're there, he was walking along the French Quarter and went into a little tourist art gallery, went all the way in the back, and there's the portrait of the hunchback woman exactly like he had seen it. And he said he was so shocked at the time that he thought he had had a stroke and was hallucinating all this. You know, he in his own book, he wrote a book called Looking for Carol Beckwith. He said, you know, these things don't happen in real life. This happens in movies, you know, and he was petrified. He couldn't believe what was happening. And then he gathered his wits and then thought, well, wait a second, just because this is the portrait, and he knew without a doubt this was the portrait in his regression. He said, well, maybe I still just saw it. Maybe it was on tour or something. And he asked the gallery worker, and the gallery worker says, you know, Carol Beckwith was not really that great a artist. This painting has been in private hands since 1912. It's never been on tour. You've never seen this. Well, now he has a big clue. You know, in his regression, even though he remembered 30 specific details, he didn't remember his name from the past lifetime. Now he's got the name, Carol Beckwith, from the painting. It turns out that even though Beckwith wasn't the greatest artist, he was a good administrator and organizer and became the president, and like Bob, by the way, who also is an administrator, he became the president of the New York Academy of Design. And they kept the diary, his diary, Beckwith's diary. Bob got the diary and validated all 30 memories through the diary, wrote a book about it, and guess what? Bob has the same facial features as Beckwith.
So you must believe in intelligent design.
Well, what you know, my point is that Bob did not find that painting by coincidence. What I believe happened is that his wife was given a telepathic message, either from Bob's own soul or some spirit guide. The telepathic message was telling his wife, go to New Orleans. And then once they were in New Orleans, Bob was telepathically or intuitively guided to the painting. You
know, there is that connection, Walter. We're going to come right back, talk a little bit more on Coast to Coast AM. Now, if you're having some problems getting onto the ISIS.net website, it's because we've probably crushed Walter's website with so much traffic. I'm sure eventually it will come right back up. Next hour, we'll take your phone calls. We'll also take maybe your reincarnation stories on Coast to Coast AM. It seems that more and more people are beginning to believe in reincarnation, Walter. That's my feeling. How about yours?
Yeah, I definitely believe so. And in part, it's cases like the James Leninger case that was featured on ABC Primetime. And I think people are searching for answers to the world's problems. I think people are tired of all the war and conflict that's based on religious differences, mm-hmm. ethnic differences, and people are, I think, are being disenchanted with traditional religion because, you know, on the one hand, we have to acknowledge it doesn't make sense. You know, I mean, how can there be all these different religions that seem to contradict one another and they all claim to have the truth? You know, from a common sense point of view, you have to say it doesn't make sense. But for the people who are deeply into the religions, you know, they can't quite let go. And I think the basic dynamic is that religions are in business because people are afraid of death. And religions serve the purpose of giving comfort, giving security, filling a void that science has not been able to fill yet. But what is happening is with evidence of reincarnation, science is going to start, there's going to be a creation of a science of spirituality, which is already happening. I mean, Ian Stevenson has done a great job in getting that started. And just like astronomy, if you remember, the church used to have their preference on how the solar system was structured, and they said that the Earth was the center of the solar system and the sun went around the Earth. And when Copernicus and Galileo said, no, that's not right, it looks like the sun is in the middle of the solar system, the church said, no, you can't say that. And they put Galileo under house arrest,
right,
and had all his books burned and had him humiliated in all the universities. Well, you know, in time, astronomy, the science of astronomy took over, and now we rely on science to teach us about the planets and the stars, not the church. And I think the same thing is going to happen with spirituality, where this evidence is more and more going to get into people's consciousness. The cases that exist are going to be better distributed. And then also these cases will continue to come out. You know, it's not going to stop. You know, the cases will continue to come out all around the world. And, in fact, this is what I was mentioning, the Indian colleague who I have, he said that before the Born Again book and before I was on CNN in India, the science community sort of just saw reincarnation as a Hindu belief. But now that people see the cases that show evidence, he says now more and more cases are coming out of the woodwork, and they're flooded now with cases coming out. And I think the same thing's going to happen in the U.S. and everywhere.
Okay, so let's get into the possibility then of soulmates and reincarnation as well. Couple, married couple, soulmates, they die. Do they get together again in reincarnation?
Well, they certainly can. And we talked about the Stevenson twin study, where the third most common category of reincarnation relationship was of spouses. So in the twin study, people who were spouses in one lifetime came back as twins in another. And I'm sure it can work the other way around also. So definitely people can, I mean, that's what the rule really is, that you come back with people that you have karma with, people that you have emotional attachments with. In terms of what a soulmate is, here I need to rely on what my spirit friend Atun Ray tells me. And he says that in truth, he says that souls were created all at once right after the Big Bang that created the physical universe, and that souls were created in pairs, but they were created to be complementary. The common notion of soulmates is it's the person that you get along with the best and you fall in love with. But really, the complementary pairing was done to balance the world, so that each person or each soul was created with a complement to balance the other person out. So for instance, soulmates that Atun Ray has cited are Moshe Dayan, the Israeli Prime Minister,
the one with the patch on his eye.
Right, and Anwar Sadat, the Egyptian president. So you typically don't think of two leaders on opposite sides of a political barrier,
spectrum,
really,
yeah,
to be soulmates, but that's more how it works. Like Louis Pasteur and Robert Koch.
And let me ask you, Walter, how often do these spirits, these souls, whatever you want to call them, how often do they reincarnate? I mean, at what point do they stop?
Well, first of all, in terms of frequency of reincarnation, what we're finding, and this is another thing to me is very exciting. In the past, we've relied on religious doctrines about how often people reincarnate. And, you know, some people would say you only reincarnate once in 1,000 years, but what the cases show is that we reincarnate very quickly. The Suzanne Ghanem case, the person reincarnated after only 10 days. And there are many cases that show that. So reincarnation can happen very quickly. According to Atun Ray, most of us, the range of lifetimes is usually 80 to 120, or around 100. So we all have about 100 lifetimes before we reach the point where we don't have to reincarnate, and we can just continue on developing in the different levels of the spiritual world. And that's where the phrase, you know, my father's house has many mansions, you know, it's in the spiritual world, there are many levels, dimensions, and basically what happens is that when you die, you go to that level that's appropriate for your level of development. And part of the motivation, I think, to reincarnate and to grow and develop is to get into the higher dimensions.
All right, let's talk about the possibility of you know, bad people, evil people. Do they reincarnate and do they come back the same?
Yeah, they do. Hopefully they will get better and improve, but people do tend to come back with similar tendencies. And another thing to keep in mind is that souls are created with a certain set of qualities. We're not all the same. And so some souls, when they're created, for instance, are more artistic souls. Other souls are more scientist-type souls.
Right.
And so that's why we come back and oftentimes do the same sort of thing, because that's what we're naturally good at. And then there's a certain category of souls that are attracted to power and leadership positions. And basically, people like Hitler, you know, misuse that power.
Does he reincarnate?
He has not. I asked Atun Ray about him, and Atun Ray says that Hitler has not reincarnated, but he will. And basically what happens when you die is you have to review your life but experience things from the point of view of other people. So Hitler, for instance, will need to review everything he did to others from the point of view of those people. You know, so the people that were persecuted, he needs to experience what they went through. And he does that through a life review, basically. And then when he's done with that, he will need to reincarnate and redeem himself. And Atun Ray has said that, you know, everybody has to redeem themselves and progress and move on to the next stage.
What are the bodhisattvas?
Yeah, so the bodhisattvas are traditionally in Buddhist philosophy are souls that don't need to reincarnate, but they do so to serve humanity. And I always thought it was a very small percentage of people who come back on the planet who are bodhisattvas, but Atun Ray says that actually it's like 20%. So many of us who are incarnate are here voluntarily. And we do it because we care about our fellow man and humanity and want the planet to progress.
Tell me about your Three Stooges cases.
Okay. So, you know, one thing, now that we, you know, I described how I came to the assessment that Atun Ray can make accurate matches. So this allows reincarnation to kind of come alive by identifying all these people in history. I mean, if you accept that reincarnation exists, which the Stevenson cases, I think, are indisputable, then it follows that all these people in history have been reincarnating all along, but we just haven't identified them. So I've asked Atun Ray about all these folks, and so, for instance, the Three Stooges are back as young comedic actors today. Mo has reincarnated as John Cho, and Larry as Cal Penn, and those two actors are famous for the Harold and Kumar series.
Right.
And if you look at Cal Penn, actually, I mean, he has the same sort of eyes, the same kind of crazy expression that Larry does. And then Curly has been identified as Eddie K. Thomas.
Curly was the bald-headed one.
The bald-headed guy. And Eddie K. Thomas is an actor who was in the American Pie series, though he also acted in the Anne Frank play with Natalie Portman, I believe.
Portman, yeah.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is Curly, even though he was heavy, was always recognized for having great athletic ability, which allowed him to do all these funny stunts. And Eddie K. Thomas also is a gifted athlete and has even had the opportunity to play professional soccer. Then the Marx Brothers, I asked Atun Ray who the Marx Brothers were, and he said that they had reincarnated in the cast of Superbad. And on the website, whenever it does come up, these cases are featured, and there's a picture of them from a movie, the movie poster, where all three of them are together, and it's the Marx Brothers reincarnated. And Groucho is the actor Christopher Mintz Plasse, and Harpo is Michael Cera. And the physical resemblance between Michael Cera and Harpo is really amazing. And then Chico reincarnated as Jonah Hill, another very popular actor.
How soon does the deceased reincarnate?
Well, you know, I think it can vary. But one thing that we're actually finding is that souls can project even more than one body at a time, or animate more than one body at a time. So it's not only that we can reincarnate frequently, but we can even reincarnate continuously by having more than one body at a time. And the classic set of cases that I use to illustrate this involves three cases involving a woman named Penny Pierce, who's an author and intuitive. And what happened to her is she went to a medium, much like Kevin Ryerson, somebody different, but somebody who is also a trance medium who channels spirit guides. And these spirit guides also had an encyclopedic scope of knowledge, just like Atun Ray. And the spirit guides told her that she had this past lifetime as a man named Charles Parkhurst and listed 10 specific titles that Parkhurst wrote, mentioned or specified the date of birth, date of death. I mean, just an incredible amount of information. Well, Penny, this happened back in the 70s, and she never bothered to research it until I met her in 2000, and based on my interest in reincarnation, she finally decided to see if this reading had any substance. And it turned out that Charles Parkhurst did exist. She still had the tape, you know, from 30 years ago. It turns out that Charles Parkhurst did exist. He did write the 10 books exactly like the medium had said, was born and died on the dates that the medium had said, and she's got the same facial features, even though there's a change in gender. Then the medium had also told her that she was a woman named Alice Carey, and again listed 10 titles that Carey had written, date of birth, date of death, said that Carey had a sister named Phoebe, who was Penny's sister Paula. And when Penny researched it, it all
matched, didn't it?
Matched, and she's got the same face as Alice Carey. So if you and also the sister matched. So if the cases are accepted, there's actually a 30-year overlap between the lifetime of Parkhurst and Carey.
Is it unheard of to reincarnate 200 times?
No, I think that's very possible. But one thing I just want to mention is Ian Stevenson also observed this phenomenon of overlapping lifetimes, and he called them cases with anomalous dates, meaning that the dates didn't match. They weren't sequential lifetimes, but overlapping lifetimes. So again, the important thing is that even though the Penny Pierce case shows it in a dramatic fashion, Stevenson also has a number of cases that show that also. And he even has a suicide case that shows an overlap where the individual who suicided actually had reincarnated before the date of death.
Before the date of death. Now, how does that happen?
Well, we had talked before about how is it that physical appearance looks the same,
right?
Is consistent from lifetime to lifetime, and that there appears to be an energy body or a hologram, if you will, that the soul projects. Well, what it appears that the soul can do is that the soul can project more than one hologram at a time. Or if you think of the soul as projecting a light beam down into the physical body, it's like a mirror can split a beam of light into. The soul can project its energy into more than one physical body at a time.
Let's look at, in the moment we have here before we take some phone calls, Walter, the work of some of the people involved today in reincarnation. You're one of them. How many others? Tucker?
Yeah, there's Jim Tucker, Paul Von Ward. I believe you've interviewed him.
Yes.
And basically Paul and I started working together. I introduced him actually to the Paul Gauguin case.
All right. Do you know Bruce Goldberg? He does this too.
I don't know Bruce.
Okay, he's
not too many.
A dentist who is now interested in reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
But no, you're right. There are not too many. And by the way, we did crash your website. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I noticed that. I was going to use it myself to refer to it. I can't get out of it.
You can't get in. No.
But I guess that's good.
That's good. Eventually, it'll open up.
Yeah.
As long as people remember it and do stuff like that. How can people tell if they're reincarnated? Hypnotherapy. That's it.
Well, there's two ways. One, you know, doing past life regressions.
Right.
But, you know, there is the proviso, though, that many times the memories aren't necessarily accurate.
Okay.
And, for instance, on the ISIS website, we only have two cases that are based on regression. One is the Bob Snow case.
Okay, but what's the other one before the break?
The other one is a xenoglossy case, and we should talk about xenoglossy at one point, where people can speak a language that they never learned in the contemporary life.
Xenoglossy. Okay, we will look at that as well when we come back in just a moment. The website's a little slammed. but you can get through to ours at coasttocoastam.com. Let's come right back. Let's make some phone calls now. Stories on reincarnation, questions for Dr. Walter Simkew on Coast to Coast AM.
Okay, Moses, we're back. In my opinion, that's quite extraordinary. Good. Area code 904. Tell me who you are, where you're calling from, and what is your question? 904.
What's up, Mo? Islam. This is Corey out of Jacksonville, Florida. How you doing?
Okay. Hey, I'm fine, brother. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And sticking to the your line of the direction that you're taking your show to. I find it strange that. The reason I'm bringing this question, the way I'm posing it, is because of the question of Yaqub. But I'm gonna get away from that for a second because that's not, you know, in the way that you brought it. But my sister, she was very precocious, in that, you know, okay, when she was young, she brought up a lot of things about, you know, stuff that will happen. It's not so much in the vein of reincarnation, but the fact that she could predict stuff that was going to happen, you know, deaths in the family. She had nightmares, and and it was scary for a while. You know, it's like, you know, that Sixth Sense child in that movie, you know, for a second. But, you know, people just, and my family just didn't want to hear from her, you know. But I feel, you know, shunning her like that, you know, kind of, you know, cut her, you know, her gift from her. And saying my cousin, who was just a bona fide crackhead, not almost a drunk, put it that way. I don't know what else he was doing, you know, but he was stealing from the family. I mean, heirlooms, things I had, even I had given to my mother from my current marriage at the time. I mean, just stuff that went back years and years back. He sold, you know, for whatever reason or purposes he had to do it. And my sister said the same way he walked off from that, with that, he ain't going to have no legs to walk. And he was in Chicago two years ago, and he was stealing scrap metal from a freight train there. And the train, I don't know how short the train was, whatever. I was trying to figure out how it could have happened. But the train moved, and when it moved, he didn't have any reaction time, or maybe he had been drunk. But he had fell between the tracks, and he lost both his legs. And this is, I'm talking about 2 years ago, when I'm talking about from childhood. And I don't know, now getting back to, you know, getting a little bit off the subject, where Yaqub is concerned. And you know how the story goes. And the brothers and sisters out there knows how the story was told, you know, and nobody really knows history unless they were there to experience it. As far as Yaqub goes, and we have this entity here that is ruling the world, and the fact that you know that they you know they have this mindset that they will stand the test of time in perpetuity. And the world could one not assimilate, put that in their mind that, you know, reincarnation, despite the fact that they're soulless, that it doesn't exist, and there must be some type of parallel coexistence with soul and soulless, but thing that is constant is that reincarnation. And I hope I'm not, you know, getting out there in the way that I put it, you know, but that's the best way I can describe it. I want to find the best way I can put out what I'm saying. Hey, Mo.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, excuse me, I'm dropping a friend off. Hey, I'll get it with you, man. But all right. I'm dropping a friend off from work. But it's just something for you know, the brothers and sisters out there to ponder. You know, it's something out here definitely bigger than all of us. And you could talk about the progression of the equinox and all that, and all that is being done to hinder our progression and consciousness. And I do believe that there's a force out here to make sure that doesn't happen. And I hope I can compel everybody to just look into your work and what you're doing. You deserve all your, to me, this is your intellectual property, because nobody's put it together like you that I've seen. And
well, thank you.
Yeah, no one. And people, like, they out here paying all kinds of money to get somewhere where you got a brother right here who will walk you through it and will disavow everything that he believes within himself to see you fail. And there's nothing that I've done personally, but I'm going to do that. And we have talked, you know, it's just that I'm on a plantation, you know, just like a lot of us are. But, you know, I do recognize you. Mo, God bless you. Islam, Allah bless you. Yahweh bless you. And you keep it up.
Okay, well, thank you so much, brother. I appreciate you calling in and giving us your opinion about this thing. And it's, you know, I thank you so much for the accolades and all that good stuff. And I just do what I have to do, and I'm going to do that. And as long as I'm on the planet, because I feel like I don't have nothing else that I'm supposed to do but to help my people. And I hope by some hook or crook, after the smoke clear, somebody benefits from some of I try to bring to you. I try to come from every angle, and I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do that I think I should do. And I thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
For getting that.
One other thing, sir, if I could.
Yeah, go ahead.
I hope you have a protege, you know, someone who will carry on your works, you know, because these people, you know, despite, you know, all the defenses that we have up, and, you know, we don't fear anything, that you would have someone who you would bring up personally and put your stamp on and bring them in the ring, you know, introduce them, you know, so that we know you put your stamp on them.
Well, I do plan to do that, but I think I've come to the conclusion now that that job is going to be left up to the Creator. I don't even think that I can make a selection. I think they're going to put that in place when the time comes. So if it comes along and then it's my duty to get them ready or whatever, whether it's on here or whether it's in the streets or whichever way it goes, I can't tell. I have to wait and be guided by the real powers that be in the universe. So that's what I had to do for that. But I thank you so much.
Yes, sir. You take care of yourself. Islam.
Islamo. You too. Okay, everybody. We've come down to the last few minutes of the broadcast, and this has been some quite interesting information. And I spent a great deal of time, even late at night, looking at things in order to bring to you all to ponder over and above what we discuss on a regular basis. There's more to life, and there's a whole lot of stuff going on. So I try to bring you something to think about and look at and examine and do the research on, and for more answers, because it's all about deliverance and freedom and moving from point A to point B. And there are many aspects to this life and many areas that we have to look at. And tonight we just dealt with a couple of them, and we will be back with some more stuff from a whole different angle. We got to deal with relationships. We got to deal with numerology. We got to deal with palmistry and all this stuff, and we will be getting to that. However, we come to the close of the broadcast. I have been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay. Da 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 da